welcome to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass. I'm going to be talking to Casey Dreesen, and you get to listen in. Casey Dreesen, unbelievably devastating musician, a very talented. Casey goes way beyond fiddle player. You've seen him, even if you don't know you've seen him, you've heard him. I guarantee you've heard him, even if you don't know you've heard him. If you ever went to a festival, let's say, and you saw a band and you saw an incredibly talented, versatile, energetic fellow on the fiddle, and all you can remember is the red shoes, that was Casey. Chances are that was Casey. He has a new album now called Singularity, and he's actually on the Singularity Tour. A lot of good stuff on YouTube about it that I've been posting. If you follow me on Facebook, you would have seen some of it. Casey has an extremely unique ability to hear and process sound and put it into a rhythm and make it all fit into the context of a composition. I can't explain it except it's essentially a fiddle, a bow, Casey, and a dozen or so effects pedals, and some timing that is unworldly, and an ability to get sounds out of the instrument itself that is very unique to Casey. Great, great musician, photographer, very creative guy. I think you're going to enjoy it. All right, let's try this. Casey.
Yes, Steve.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Well, I know a little bit that we talked a little bit before we went on the air that you're kind of, you're fighting a little bit of a cold, so...
I'm a bit under the weather. I don't usually... I feel like I don't really get them, get sick very often, so this is a... It comes as a surprise to me.
And it's great.
It's not very fun.
Well, it's not very much fun, but, you know, especially, like, I know you're kind of in your, you know, your period right now where you're in between, you know, really actively travel, so I would guess you want to relax a little bit, and you get to relax with a cold.
Well, yeah, at least I'm at home, and I'm not dealing with this while I'm out playing somewhere or traveling, so this is... I was thinking the other day when I... I've had to travel before with flying when my head is completely
not good.
Stopped up.
And not good.
I can't think of more that is so painful. And I was just really happy I didn't have to fly
yep.
the last couple of days.
You would think how much more economical would it be? Let's say they get rid of waterboarding and they just put everybody in a plane and give them a head cold and fly them around for a couple of hours.
No.
Don't you think people would just fall by the wayside?
Oh, it hurts. Yeah, I still remember the one... particular flight where I just couldn't wait for it to be over. Anyway.
Well, I'm glad you're up.
I'm improving.
Okay, I'm glad you're around. We're talking to Casey Dreesen here on Steve Martin's Unreal Blue. I'm so happy to be able to sneak you in. I know you're very busy. We were off the air, Casey, for about the first 12 minutes, so I ran in real quick and kind of ran through what we're going to do today and had a chance to explain that. I will bet you that everybody out there, especially in the world that listens to this program, which is Unreal Bluegrass for a number of reasons. It's very, you know, it's old and it's new, and I really include everything. I bet you everybody listening has heard you on a recording, whether they even realized it or not, and I bet you 80% of the people have seen you if they go out regularly to concerts, and they may not always recognize right away. And what I mentioned to them, that if you were wondering who the fabulous fiddle player was on stage with all these great players, and all you can remember as you leave was that he had red shoes on, then you've seen Casey Dreesen.
Yes, that would be me.
Well, that's your exclamation point.
Yeah, well, I guess so. Well, thank you.
Well, I mean, if they couldn't remember, if they were just blown away, let's say your playing was so phenomenal that they just thought, I forgot to get the guy's name. Just think of the red shoes, and there you are. And
that's
I've
for everybody.
Yeah, and I've seen you with so many great bands on stage. I've seen you walking through the halls at IBMA where you just stop and just, like, set up a little thing and start playing. Here's Casey Dreesen just like playing and not so much jamming with people, but it's like, I'm going to do a little performance right here. Your very free spirit is to when you set up. It's always professional, but I don't think you're bound by a lot of the conventions that maybe other musicians, and I don't know if that's the freedom of just being so versatile and be able to fill a performance with just your fiddle or just the way you are. I don't know. We can talk about that. I want to talk about a lot of things. I know you have the new album. Is it called Singularity?
Yep.
Okay. And we talked right before we went on the air about one aspect of so many things on YouTube with Casey. But let's talk a little bit about, let me do this for you, Casey. When I see you play now and you're doing this thing with, I don't know, a dozen or so, I'll call them effects pedals. They really have become computerized components, I suppose.
Yeah.
I remember back when I was a kid and I would see Jean-Luc Ponty. And the miracle thing of him for me was that he would play off of an echo machine. He would record a loop and then come back and play it in. You've taken that little bit and you've just made it like exponentially large. Can you explain a minute what I'm trying to clumsily talk about when you see Casey play, and if you're in a performance by yourself or doing a solo bit, you're there with the fiddle and the bow, and people see you stepping on a lot of things and looping a lot of information back into you.
Sure.
What's that about? Talk about that a minute.
Yeah, well, first, Jean-Luc Ponty was a big influence for me, not necessarily the effects sort of thing, but just I loved his playing. Once my brain had gotten to the point where I could appreciate what it was that he was playing, you made me think about this one Christmas where my dad gave me a couple of Jean-Luc Ponty records, and I listened to them, and they were too far out for me at where I was musically at the time. And then a couple years later, I put them back on after I started to study some more intense harmonic structure, and just kind of I started down a little bit different path musically. And then I put on the same Ponty records, and I loved them again. So he's another five-string fiddle player, a guy that plugs in, and certainly has been a big influence for me.
Well, I have to say, I felt pretty safe bringing that name up, and we've never talked before, but I knew there would be a connection there at some point.
Yeah, definitely. I have met him one time, and I got a speeding ticket because I was so excited to go and meet him, actually. it was in Nashville one of the first years that I lived in Nashville, and Fred Carpenter, who runs the violin shop there, he called me and said, "Hey, Jean-Luc Ponty's hanging out in town. He's down here, and Buddy Spiker's here, Matt Glazer's here, Stewart's here. You should come down and, hang out." And so, of course, that's where I wanted to be. And so I got in my car, and I got a speeding ticket on the way there. So, and it always takes longer when you're speeding, and then you get a speeding ticket.
Yeah, it kind of works that way.
Yeah. But so the electronic side of things. So what I'm doing is... I'm using just the fiddle to create all these different textures and sounds, and trying to take whatever noises and notes come out of my instrument, and then I send it through all these different, like you said, they're essentially small computers at this point, that add echoes, add harmonies, add reverbs, which is like make it sound like it's in a concert hall if you want to have a string section. You go through all these pedals, and then the last pedal in this chain of pedals is what's called a looper. And essentially, it is a recording device and operated by my feet. All these are operated by my feet. And what happens is I might play two bars of a groove, something percussive to play along to, like a metronome of sorts, but... I'll step on the pedal, the looper, right at the beginning of the place where I want to start recording, and then I step on it again right where I want to stop recording, and it will continuously play that section over and over seamlessly. And you can then add layers on top of that loop as well, so you can create these whole textures, these whole arrangements, essentially fill up the different sounds that might exist in a band. With just using the fiddle, and I recreated it all live. Nothing's pre-recorded. It's all done from scratch.
Right, yeah. There. So when you do something like, let's say, the heartbeat kit, okay,
yeah.
which you've deconstructed on the, we talked about this TED speech that I want to talk to you a little bit, because I see these things and I always wonder how those happen. Before we get there, every time you would do a live version of Heartbeat Kit, which we'll talk about in a minute. Are you recreating it at the moment? I assume you have certain elements you want to put in, but are there timing issues different? Are there things you're just feeling different? I got a feeling it would change a little bit each time you do it, not because it has to, but because maybe you're feeling things differently.
Well, the arrangement is pretty set because you have to press, let me back up. So the looper that I use allows me to record three separate tracks. And then on each one of those tracks, you can overdub. So the arrangement is pretty set because you want one to, in order to get from part A to part B, you have to record things in a certain order, and you have to record them in a certain amount of time. So the arrangement is set. But the interpretation, the phrasing, all of that stuff changes every night. I'm always finding little different things to improve. Little accidents happen that are good. Some are bad. Tempos change. I might, if I set the loop in the beginning. So if I start out fast and I record it, then I'm stuck with that tempo that evening. Each arrangement for each tune has different places for manipulation and creativity and spontaneity. Some are more set than others. It just really depends on the tune.
Well, and to the people that are listening, if you see Casey Dreeson live, you're going to wonder how many fiddles does he go through, because he kind of beats on them a lot as he's going through this thing. That's where a lot of his percussion sound comes in. And I don't think you're really destroying them along the way, but I would imagine I would imagine that as you're playing, well, I hope you're not. I would imagine as you're playing, maybe each night your emphasis on the percussive part that you would get off of contacting the body of the fiddle might change, just maybe depending on the feel what you have. I mean, there's a lot of room there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just physically, there's a lot of wiggle room. You can't hit the same place on the instrument completely accurately every night. Sometimes, I use the heel of my hand on the back of the fiddle to get a kick drum sound. And sometimes it's right on and it's got a nice deep kick drum sound. And there are other times where my hand might be hitting in just a slightly different place, and it's acceptable, though it's not maybe the best that it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of variation that comes from the physical situation that I'm in. Like if I'm standing on carpet, it changes how I react to pedals. If I have different shoes on, it changes how I can press the pedals. If I'm on a cruise ship, which I've done this on a cruise ship before, that is very difficult because as the boat lists and you're standing on one leg getting ready to press a pedal, you may miss the whole pedal board. So as I'm recreating it, because I'm recreating it live, I'm welcoming in, I guess, any sort of variations that may happen just
from the environment,
how you're feeling and what the situation is that you're in.
Yeah.
But that's what keeps it interesting for me. I mean, because it's just me there. If I was playing along to tracks, the same tracks every night, there would be no challenge, really, to that. This continues to be challenging every night for me because I have to hit it accurately and quickly sometimes, really fast.
Let's talk about, first of all, people are listening, if they've seen a certain band where you would have appeared, let's say in the last year, and I know you're always around and you show up on stage with different people, but who would this audience of this Unreal Bluegrass audience, which I think they're a little hipper than some, I'm just going to say that, but who would they have seen you with? let's say in the last year, who would they have seen you with?
Most recently, I've done a good number of things with Bela Fleck. I was out with the Flecktones when they were back together with the original four members.
Mm-hmm. I saw that show.
I was part of that, although I wasn't one of the original four. I was a guest on that. And then
you were the fifth. You were the fifth Beatle.
What's that?
You were the fifth Beatle.
Daryl Scott. I perform with him when he uses a band occasionally, and also Tim O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the guys that I still perform with.
Let me ask you this: Do you ever get back together on stage with Rashad Eggleston?
Occasionally it happens, and we are about to play at a friend's wedding in 2 weeks, and he's writing a song for them for their wedding.
Yeah.
So we don't quite know what's going to happen.
That's
but,
bold.
I run into him from time to time, and it's great. We love playing together. We love hanging out.
And
we had a lot of good time together.
He's been on this show, and it was just and I've seen him play, and a lot of people have, you see what he's doing on stage, and he has such a good heart and such an unbelievable talent that when we actually got to talk, it was just just like this. We're just like talking, and it's like, yeah, he's got this Rashad character, which is still deep in his heart, but if you want to talk seriously and be, pretty direct about it, he was there too. You've known him, I guess, since the Berkeley.
We went
days.
To college together.
Yeah. Okay.
So I met him back. It would have been probably in '99
okay.
or so, or maybe in '98 that I met him. We were at Berkeley College of Music together.
Yeah, okay.
And, exploring different ways to play our instruments. Really.
Well. I think you've both gone there in different directions. I do think it's bold that someone would ask him to. He's not gonna, He's not gonna well, pee on a bird at a wedding.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. Listen, I wanted to. There is this TED, and as I'm looking through things, and I get ready to have someone on the show, I go back and revisit little bits of things that are on the internet, and I've listened to most of your album through different pieces, the Singularity album. But you do a discussion on TED about the Heartbreak Kid, kind of a little bit it's more expanded because you're there with your instrument on stage. But I was curious, how the heck did you get on TED? What's it stand for, and how did you get on there?
Well, it's, you know, it's technology, entertainment, and design. And then the thing that I was part of is what is a TEDx event. And so what TEDx is, well, there's a main organization called TED, and that's the big, you know, that's the top of it. And then there are these satellite versions of these TED conferences that have sprung up in cities around the U.S., perhaps internationally, I'm not sure. But and so I was invited to perform at one and speak a little bit about what I do. And the way that came about was that I was doing a concert, one of my first Singularity shows, where I was just, you know, I hadn't quite all gotten all the gear to the point where I like where it's at now. I was still testing some things out. And so I did the show, and somebody came up to me afterwards and said, I'm helping coordinate people to participate in TEDx, and would you like to be a part of it? I said, well, yes, of course, I'd love to. You know, so for folks that don't know, it's these they get very interesting and inspirational people that are great thinkers, designers, people, they give these talks that are really kind of about their life or about what they do, and I find it very inspiring to listen to them and check them out.
Yeah.
And so I was honored to be asked to be a part of it. And since it had come about because I was doing my Singularity, one man fiddle show, I thought it'd be good to talk about how that came about and then play a piece, which is the Heartbeat Kid, and talk about how the different elements of that kind of came together. And I had 12 minutes to do this. And you don't get a second take on any of this stuff.
Oh, good. I was going to ask you that. All right.
No, this is probably, you know, I've done a lot of stage time. And most of it's just playing. You know, certainly there's MC work that happens in between songs. But that is, you know, it's not like I'm really giving a speech to people. So the idea of having to be concise and to the point and meaningful, and then perform one of the looping pieces, which anything could happen, really.
And, you know, and it looks to me like the audience is kind of further away, just by the way the stage is. In other words, I don't know how much feedback you get from people in the front row, you know, to connect off of.
You know, I have in-ears that I'm using, and for folks that don't know, instead of having speakers on stage where the sound comes back where I can hear what I'm doing, I have headphones in, and that helps me to be more accurate with the looping.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
And,
I didn't mean to cut you off. But go ahead.
I don't really get to hear a lot of feedback, honestly, because I have those in.
Okay.
So I'm who knows? Sometimes I have no idea. I'm kind of shut off a little bit from what happens around me. So if it's a noisy bar crowd, sometimes I probably realize that it might be a noisy bar crowd, but because I have those headphones in to hear what I'm doing, I can kind of shut that stuff out a little bit.
All right, so you got 12 minutes in one take.
Yeah, 12 minutes in one take, and it was probably one of the most nervous things that I've done to try and to execute it all and to be up there and knowing that it's going to be out and available for anybody to see. And I was really honored to be, asked to participate. And so I practiced a lot for it. You know, I sat in my, you know, I stood in my music room and I talked to the wall for 2 weeks, you know, going through the things that I was going to say. And I timed myself and, you know, how much notes do I need? They had coaches.
Oh, good.
You know, I'd go see a coach for this sort of stuff. And the first dress rehearsal that I went to, afterwards, the person said, "You got to take a breath, slow down." And I realized that I was completely nervous at this training.
Oh, okay.
And so anyway, it really required me to do some things that I hadn't done before, and I wanted it to come out well. And I think it worked out all right. And then I stayed within my 12 minutes. So
I bet you've taken as much as you've lived a great part of your life on stage, or at least perform. I bet though that you learned some bits, like the thing about slow down. I bet you learned some things that you've taken from that enhanced your live performances.
Oh, definitely. And just the process of thinking about what I wanted to say and how to tell people about the Singularity Project and the steps that I went through to arrive at this point has given me better ways to explain it when I'm on stage.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I think it gave me a little bit more freedom and a little bit, you know, set me at ease a little bit more just when I'm up there by myself, because that's what it, I mean, there's nobody to kill time for me at a solo show. So I'm figuring out ways to do that.
Good. Is Singularity then, I want to talk about the Heartbeat Kit again, because I love the way you get into it. And the fact that, what I guess, your first initial rhythm track, we'll talk about that in a minute, but the Singularity album, explain to the people exactly what you've got, because now you're touring, I guess, then you're touring as this show we described, correct?
Yes. When I go out and play solo shows, this is what I'm doing. It's just me with fiddle and my pedal board and creating arrangements, creating tunes from the ground up. And once people realize what's happening, then I think you're kind of along for the ride. And I have realized when I've done this that a perfect night for me was when everything, you know, goes flawlessly. You know, you step on all the pedals at the right time, you play in tune, all that sort of stuff. And it's almost like when that happens, folks don't realize that it's really kind of a balancing act. In the beginning, when I started this off, there would be times where I'd have to stop and start again. And when that happens, it helps the audience to understand that, oh, this is happening live right now. This is not pre-recorded.
You've become too polished.
Yeah, well, but, you know, that's what I strive for, is the polish.
Right.
You know, but, and then I thought, well, maybe I should... Should I try and work something into the show where I mess up?
Oop, I dropped my bow.
That's just inviting.
drop my bow 36 minutes after we start.
Yeah, I know. Because as soon as I work something like that in, other stuff's going to start going wrong. So I just kind of let it happen.
Is it Casey Dreesen or is it one of those holograms?
You're right.
Well, let's talk the story about the Heartbeat Kit and that very first loop, as I understand. This is amazing to me. You go, you talk about it, because you've done this in front of people.
Sure, right. So I have a child. She's four and a half now, and it's my first kid. And so when we were pregnant, I think it was around 14-week ultrasound that we go in for to hear the heartbeat for the first time. And I didn't know what to expect. I had never... I didn't have any point of reference. All I knew was my own, you know, adult heartbeat.
Right.
And I thought, well, why not bring in some recording gear? That's kind of what I do, right?
Yeah.
And so I brought in a microphone and a little, my computer, and I set it up in the ultrasound room, and we listened to the heartbeat, and I recorded it. And it was a lot faster, and it was a lot swishier sounding, you know, like... sort of like that. If you have kids and you've been in for it, I would imagine you probably never forget it.
No.
So I recorded that and I brought that home, and, you know, my wife and I listened to it. We thought it was great to have this, you know, representation that we could listen to of the life that was within. And I found the groovy little couple bars of it that I really liked, and I ended up looping that just to have something to play along to, and I started composing a melody.
It's almost like a hi-hat cymbal.
It is. It is kind of like that. And so I played this melody, recorded it, and so I didn't forget it, and then essentially forgot about the melody after a little while because I was busy raising my first child and the learning curve that's involved with that. So fast forward 2 years, and I'm on the road with the Flecktones and with Bela, and we would sit in the back of the bus occasionally and just kind of play some tunes together, just to stay warmed up, and then once in a while we'd play tunes that we'd written for each other. And I was trying to think of, like, what have I written lately that might be interesting to Bela, you know? And, that's right, I had this tune that I wrote, and it was in five, and it was this, you know, how did that go? And so I got out the recording and relearned the melody, but I didn't have any chords to it. I didn't have any way to help him to play it.
Get into it, right.
So what I ended up doing is we got stranded on the road during Hurricane Irene, and we took cover in Burlington, Vermont, which was didn't end up taking any cover at all because the hurricane went up there, and we were stranded there for 4 days up in a hotel room. And so I stayed in my hotel room for, you know, essentially 4 days with all my gear set up and just playing my fiddle. And first thing I would, you know, I thought, well, maybe I should work on this tune a little bit. Maybe here's some time I've got. And I looped the melody because that's all I had. So I record the melody into the looper. And so that plays. And then I just start strumming the fiddle to try and figure out what chord changes do I want. So I figure out the chord changes that I want. And then I kind of fool around with some different bass sounds because I'd like to have bass on some certain parts. And so I find a bass part that I like. What's the groove? What's the line? And then I thought, the string section might sound good in here. So I looked for a nut on one of my other pedals to try and create something that would take the sonic place of a string section. And slowly, you know, this whole arrangement is starting to be born, I guess.
Clever.
Yeah, right. First word that came to mind. And so then at the end of all of this, I had thought about the heartbeat that it was originally composed to. And I wanted to have some way to represent that in the piece. And there's a new bowing that I'd been working on. With this whole percussive bowing that I've been doing, this, I guess it's called chopping, mm-hmm. On the fiddle. I've been working on some new techniques for that, and I found a new one that was inspired by this shaker player from Madagascar named Mario. And trying to recreate his shaker sounds, I found a way to, I had to figure out a new way to bow, and this bowing turned out to be the way to reproduce the sound of the harpy, you know, the ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And so that's the first thing that I record when I do the loop. You know, when this piece starts, is I record the heartbeat first, and then everything else plays along to that.
And it's really a cool thing because it's not like you're just like, I got to use all these pedals. It's not like you're not keeping all the plates, you know, on the spinning sticks on the Ed Sullivan Show because you have to. You're using what fits and is appropriate for the timing and for the feel that you're trying to get out of each tune. And it's just the neatest thing to see. I mean, it's just like, you know, and then when you get the backstory of where you got this initial sort of rhythm track that you've very politely recreated with your mouth today. It's just a cool thing. It's just neat. It just really showcases so much what you're doing right now. Now we're talking about this now with all the new little cool computer stuff. So imagine, you know, let's push it forward 5 years from now. What's going to be available for, you know, somebody like you and performing by yourself? Who knows?
Oh, I don't know. You know, at this point, I'm pretty happy with my setup. You know, and I feel like I've slowly been upgrading each little component as I'm finding their limitations, you know, creatively, where I wish this pedal's great, but if it could just do this, mm-hmm. You know, and I'm really not that with any of these pedals right now. I still feel like there is untapped potential for composition and arrangement within what I have. So who knows what will happen in 5 years, but I'm pretty satisfied with what I got, and I think that there's still a lot. I still got a lot of ideas that I have not worked out yet, because it takes a long time to put these things together to kind of, because you have to do a puzzle, essentially. Mm-hmm. Can I press this button in time, and then this other one, and then this other one, and then will the part play at the right time? It really is a puzzle.
I can't, Casey, when I see you do these things, I cannot imagine keeping all those things up in the air and then making them all fall in line. I can't imagine what it must be, the most intense focusing, and maybe because you're in it, it doesn't strike you that way. Maybe it does. But on the outside, it's like, how can you possibly keep all these elements, know where they're coming in, and keep them working so that when it's all up there, all the balls are in line? I don't know how you do that.
You know, one thing that I realize is that, you know, I can't have a drink before a show.
Yeah.
Or I don't let myself, because I need to be quick. You know, I got to be accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, I'll wait till after a show. And that way I can, at least I'm doing that to help myself. And because there's so many variables here and things that can go wrong, and it's just me. There's nobody to cover.
Mm-hmm.
There is certainly some muscle memory that gets accumulated for these arrangements over time. But when I haven't been playing it for a while, you know, sometimes I go on tour with somebody else for something, and then I come back and do some solo shows. I have to spend a few days just, you know, doing what I call band practice, which is just me and my pedals, and have to just get the rhythm of all the button presses and how to play and improvise at the same time while this is going on.
It's amazing. It's amazing to see folks. And if Casey, and on this Singularity, I guess we will call it the Singularity Tour, if he comes around, you got to go see it, because it's first of all, you can tell he's very dedicated, very nice guy, and very pleasant, and a great performer. I've seen you a million, but you got to see this thing live. You got to see what he's talking about live, because even though you can watch it on video, it's just more fun to go watch him do it live, because then you might have that moment where he tries to over fake the polished. Actually, he may start creating some sort of an accident so he doesn't look so good at it. That might be the thing to look for.
You know, where hopefully I don't fall down on all the stuffers. You know, the thing I can think of is, oh, what if I spill a drink or spill a glass of water on top of all this electronics? That, you know, game over. But I will say that I recently did a show. You know, I was out in Finland doing some of this stuff, and at this festival, they asked me to do a solo acoustic as well, just me and the fiddle, and I hadn't done that. I'd hardly done that at all, and at least not for many years. And I had such a great time doing that, it made me feel like, okay, I'm not just tied to the technology. That if it all goes down, I can still play the fiddle, and it's still fine. So it was a nice little reminder there that you can just play the fiddle as well.
Now, how do you? Okay, so now you've got a four? She's four and a half.
Yeah, she's four and a half.
Four and a half. You've got a child now. You've got all these cool little tools that you travel with. But so when do you have time to do your photography? Because last time I looked at what you were doing, you were pretty into that too.
You know, it is not as much as I would like. You know,
lots of baby pictures.
Yeah, lots of baby pictures, and just a. I was doing more photography, and I still am, but I was doing more when I was working for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the responsibility level when you're playing on the road with somebody else is much less than when you're a solo guy, and you're getting, you're hauling all your gear from point A to point B, and you're loading in, you're sound checking, you're setting up merch, you're settling up, you're getting back to the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just
be there at 8 o'clock.
It's exactly. So I was definitely doing more of it when I was playing with people, but playing with other folks. But I still take my camera with me, and I'm still snapping pictures. I'm not as active with putting them up online as I was able to be before. I go through phases.
Yeah.
But you know what I've been doing that's been fun. Trying my hand at the camera I have takes good video as well. So I've been taking this opportunity with the new record to create visuals to accompany the tracks from the new Singularity record. And it's not like making a music video, but it's not a floating album cover, you know, on mm-hmm. YouTube when the track plays.
Right, gotcha.
So I wanted to find something that is interesting to watch, something that I'm into, something maybe I can show people that I, you know, some cool things that I get to see occasionally from travels, and edit that down to go along with one of the tracks. And so I've got 5 of those completed and online.
Good, okay.
And I just filmed, 2 days ago, filmed the 6th. So, for example, what I've done so far, I filmed a street artist doing a spray paint art on like a small canvas, you know, and so you get to see the whole thing start from nothing and be a piece by the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then I filmed scenes during the fall, all the fall colors from the bus, you know, as we're just kind of, we're up in New England. And so all these just gorgeous colors, and it's kind of a spooky song. And so that was one thing that I did. And then another one is I got a caricature made of myself in New York City, and I didn't know what it was going to be like, but I filmed the thing, you know.
You mean a drawing?
Drawing me.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah, I said I'd like to get, you know, I'd like a full body caricature, please, and I'm going to hold my fiddle. And do you mind if I set up the camera and film this while you do it?
There you go. That's cool.
So I did that, and I went to a blacksmith buddy of mine, and I filmed him working on some pieces that he's doing. And he's got this machine called a nasal hammer, and it's a giant. I mean, it's you step on this step on this bar, and it pulverizes metal. You know, it's just, I don't even know how to. I mean, it's a giant hammer.
You did this with fiddles.
And I happen to, yes, I try to fiddle in it.
So.
The one I just did the other day was I went to a glass blowing studio. And so I watched a guy create a piece from just from the very beginning to the end. And so that's the one I'm going to edit now. So there's, you know, just hopefully some interesting things that will get you through the music as well when you're. If you happen to look for the music on YouTube.
Yeah. So, all right. So you're kind of at a little bit of a break now, which is good. And then you're going to start up again, I guess, 14?
Yeah. Let's see what's happening.
Yeah. Go ahead. Take a minute. We'll get you some people to follow you around.
Yeah. Come on. Follow it around. I've got a gig in, going from Asheville to Kansas City for Folk Alliance in February.
Okay.
And so I'll be doing some shows during that time. And I've got a couple things in January. This is generally this time of year kind of dips down in the live touring and sort of reassess and figure out how next year is going to go and maybe do some recording, kind of get your plan together and spend some time with family and friends.
Sure, you got to do that. That's, or else what's the point?
Yeah.
The rest of it's just gravy. Are you coming back to Grey Fox?
I am not sure.
Okay, well, I think...
I mean, I'm sure that I will be at some point, but I don't know.
Just
about
don't know for sure. I think that I will be back. That was there last year, and I was trying to broadcast for the first time in 98 degree weather live, and we actually did 2 days of the concert, but it was some pretty serious heat.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think I was there this last year.
Yeah, you were. You were. I'm sure I got you somewhere on the thing.
I was there. Who was I there playing with? It was a Tim O'Brien gig.
Oh sure, yeah.
And that was a fun band. That was a really fun band.
Great band.
It was Noam Pikelny and Mike Bubb and Brian Sutton and Tim and myself.
Yeah, good. That was good. That was a great show. Great show. And you have a website where, you know, people just can't wait to see you live. They can go to, I would just plug in Casey Dreesen. That's what I do. And they get your website and you can look at the photographs. That's where the music is available, and that's where you can follow him pretty easily. And also, probably, are the videos...
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly social media, your normal social media, Facebook type of stuff is good as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I try and stay active. It's tough to do it all, you know. Sometimes I'm more active than others, but I'm not going anywhere.
Well, and I would also suggest that people check this TED. That's just a neat thing, and you did nail it, and it'll help them really get introduced. And, oh, look, I hear...
You hear somebody in the background there?
I do,
there?
Yeah.
Somebody
let's
just,
got, loop
just
that.
Got up from a nap.
Can we loop that?
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'll be your new rhythm
looped,
for that.
A loop crying track.
It'll be the heartbreak kid instead of the heartbeat kid.
Yeah.
All right.
Aww.
Well, listen, you take care of your waking child there. And
I will.
Hey, man, thanks so much for being available. I know it's a hard time to squeeze stuff in so close to holidays and family time, and I really means a lot to the people that listen to the program.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Steve. I really appreciate
it. Hey, listen, anytime, come on back.
Keeping on me to make it happen. Yeah. And I'll have to get back to you and let you know how Rashad's composed piece goes for our friend's wedding.
Yes, I want to know. All right, man. Well, listen, don't be a stranger.
I'm looking forward to it.
Don't be a stranger.
I won't be.
All right. Thanks, Casey.
Okay.
See you, man. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was fun. He happens to be, he wasn't feeling that well. As a matter of fact, when we talked, when we finally got everything up and running with the network, I realized my lead-in time had been cut down a bit. So I called him in the middle of one of the tunes that was playing just to let him know that I'm still here. And he was juggling with some fluids, kind of suffering from a cold. I always feel, you know, Casey's not a singer, but still you don't feel great when you have a cold. And he was struggling a little bit with talking. And, of course, here I am calling in saying, now you got to speak really loudly. And the guy's fighting a cold. Nice guy. What a phenomenal musician. And just as you can tell, a nice fellow who's very interested in what he's doing and puts a lot of effort into making it just right. And of course, now, as he says, he's going to play with Rashad Eggleston, who's writing a wedding song, which I'm going to have to find out about that at some point. Maybe Casey or Rashad, who's been on the show, will call back in and say, you know, we weren't hanging from the rafters and everything worked fine. Thanks so much, Casey Dreesen. Best of luck to you next year, and I'll catch up to you, I guarantee, at some point. That was fun.